Okay, today is Thursday, March 28th, 2019. I'm Joey Plaster. We're here at the George Peabody Library. And do you want to go ahead and just start with a really brief introduction, your name, your house, some of the categories you've walked?
My name is Rhonda Carr. I am a member of the House of Icon. I've been a part of the House of Icon since 2000. My categories that I have walked so far in ballroom is my main category is sex siren, female figure sex siren. I've also walked female figure face. I have also walked body, femme queen body. I think those are the three categories that I've walked.
Can you talk just maybe a little bit about your life before you came into ballroom, where you were born, when you were born, what that kind of looked like?
I was born in Baltimore, Maryland, 1981. What else?
Maybe talk about what neighborhood you were you raised in, what it was like, what was your family was like?
I was born in West Baltimore. I was very family orientated. My family has been very supportive of my transition. I have been a trans woman since the age of 15. Where I was around as far as my growing up, it wasn't really hard for me, I would say the least. It wasn't really hard for me at all. I got along with most of the people that I went to school with. It was easy for them. For the most part, I didn't have many problems with them, accepting my transition. It was just the more point of, I had to show the people that this is really who I was. That was the hardest part. But as far as that, I think I had like a kind of easy life with my transition.
And did you transition before or after ballroom?
I transitioned before ballroom. At the age of 14, 15, of course, my mom and my family had a couple of concerns with me being transgendered. My mom works at the police department, and she gets a lot of the stories on trans women and prostitution and sex trafficking. I guess it's the same thing, the murders and things like that. So I think that their concern was more so for me and me being safe. Far as my transition before ballroom, I've always had a couple of friends who was a great part of my transition. One in particular, my best friend, my brother, Michael Davis. He was there from the beginning of my transition to till now. I've also had a couple of other friends. Ballroom is where I met my my gay mother, Sabrina Bennett. She was the mother of the House of Icon and still is the mother of the House of Icon. She's taught me a lot of different things about being trans and ways to go with this lifestyle, hormones, how to get your body, things like that.
Okay, let's back up a little bit. Do you remember the first time you heard about ballroom?
The first time I heard about ballroom, it was, I was with my friends. I was only in two houses since I was in ballroom, which was the House of Revlon and the House of Icon. The House of Revlon, to me, was a family-orientated house. Most of my friends that I've met from, I'm also in a marching band. I'm in a marching band scene as well. I met a lot of them through the marching band, and then they were going to balls. So they kind of introduced me to the ballroom scene, which was a couple of people from the House of Icon. I mean, the House of Revlon, excuse me. Introduced me to the ballroom scene. My first category, or my first time ever walking a ball, was at the Club Buns. I walked as Female Figure Realness. Shortly after that, the House Father, Tony Revlon, introduced me to being in a new category called Junior Sex Siren. Junior Sex Siren and Sex Siren is basically exactly what it sounds like. It's a category where you show you're sexy. You don't wear much clothes. It's like lingerie, costumes, burlesque kind of like. And you just do what you do.
I want to ask more about that, but let's back up again, because I think it's fascinating. At least two other people have told me that they found ballroom through these marching bands.
Yes.
So can you tell me a little bit more about the marching bands? Was there a high percentage of gay and lesbian people?
people in the band?
Well, I always was interested in marching bands. The way that I got involved with marching bands is that my uncle was a football player at Morgan State University, and I was introduced to marching bands through the college marching band, the Morgan State University marching band. I was very intrigued. One evening, for me getting a good report card, my mom took me to a surprise. And the surprise was she enrolled me into a marching band that was the Baltimore Westsiders. I marched with the Baltimore Westsiders from 1988 up until 1997 when I started to transition.
And how would you describe a marching band to somebody who hasn't been a part of that?
A marching band at the time when I first joined was a great place for young children and teenagers and young adults. It was something to get you off the street. I was always into dancing and choreography, so it gave me a time to let that light shine. And with that being said, although it was a lot of cisgender males and females, drummers and marchers, there were a lot of LGBTQ persons that was in the band as well. And when you're in that type of community, you meet the people that are like yourselves. The LGBT community always stood out in the marching bands. They were very flamboyant. It also helped me find myself. It wasn't until I seen another trans person that was in the marching band that I kind of figured out that it could be possible for a person who felt like I felt but didn't look like how I felt, that I seen that it was possible to actually transition and to live a life different from what you were born. I did. This person is now one of my, I guess you could say one of my aunties. Her name is Tracy, Tracy Rice. She basically was the first trans person that I've met my whole entire life. And I met her when I was very, very young, like 1988, 89. That was the first trans person I've ever come in contact with.
And the marching bands, are those primarily African
Americans? Yes, they're primarily African Americans, mostly inner city youth who get involved with the marching band. We do have some people from the counties, Baltimore County, as far as it really goes, that are involved with the marching band scene.
Okay, so you met some of these folks in the marching band, and do you remember, I know this was a long time ago, what they told you about ballroom?
Well, when I was introduced, most of my friends were older than I, and they were already involved in ballroom. I didn't know exactly what ballroom entailed, what to expect, but it was more, when I went, it was more of a club thing. I went to the club, and I walked the category, like I said before, and when I walked the category, the father of the house asked me to be in the house of Revlon. Now, when I first started walking balls, I didn't know much about balls, period. So when they explained, it really wasn't an explanation. It was just like, we're going out, and you can walk a category. And my friends actually told me to walk the category of realness. I didn't know exactly what that entailed, but they kind of gave me like, you know, you're living a life as a woman. So basically you're being judged on how well you fit into society from the LGBT community, basically.
And so by that point, by the age of 15, you had already transitioned.
Yes.
It seems like that was relatively early for that time period. Is that wrong?
Yes, it was relatively early. But for myself, I felt as though I didn't want to grow older and play games with myself and other people. I've always felt like a girl when I was very, very young. I was never molested or anything like that, but I've always felt like I was a girl. A lot of people think that transitioning comes from some type of background of you being molested or sometimes with sexual acts, but no, it's just truly how I felt inside, and I went on my outside to look how my inside felt. So it gave me a chance to explore that. At the age of 15, it was kind of hard because I was still a youth and I was living at home, so I had to explain in words that I couldn't really explain to my family what transitioning mean, because when I first transitioned, my family was just thinking that it was just, I was being feminine and I was showing my feminine side and I wanted that side to show, and they thought it was like maybe a fad, or I would say something that was very temporary, but I knew that it wasn't. So being in ballroom introduced me to that it was possible to be trans, how to figure out the words to say to my parents and my family, how to make them understand what that was, what transgender was. And at that time, it wasn't a name for it at all. It wasn't transgender. Back when I was coming out, it was either the words that the streets used was either, was it live or Memorex, or he, she, or she-male.
Wait, where were the first terms?
Live or Memorex. Memorex is like fake. Live is like real.
Okay, I get it. And what year was that about?
Let me see. That was 19, that was 15, maybe 19, Jesus, 94.
94, okay. And House of Revlon at that time was one of the biggest houses in Baltimore.
Yes, well, I didn't get involved actually with ballroom until my senior year of high school.
Okay, so that would have been...
It's like 16, 17.
Okay, and what year would that have been?
98, 99.
Okay. So tell me a little bit more. You're coming into the scene... You've already transitioned, but you don't have the kind of language or the knowledge. How did you attain that knowledge in ballroom? How did that happen?
Well, honestly, with being in ballroom, you know, the way that I've learned a lot of things is that it was a lot of trans women that I started to see. I had my share of gay mothers, and at the time, a gay mother, and still today, is a gay mother who basically guides you on things that they know. They've been walked a life before you did, and they introduce you to different things. Luckily, I had positive influences in my life. One of my first gay moms that I had would be Dee Dee Revlon. She was a femme queen, as we would say, transgender femme queen in the ballroom scene. The next one I had was Misha Milan. She was Asian. And then the last one, not the last one, but the one before the one I kept was Whitney France. Whitney France and actually Sabrina Bennett are cousins. And with all of them, they were all beautiful women, but I felt as though they weren't the type of woman that I wanted to be, not to take anything from them. But I think as far as when I seen Sabrina... I think that she was a person that I could look at. She was able to fit into mainstream society, which means that she was real. And she was just enough extras to be in the ballroom scene. So it worked out. She didn't go, when I seen her, and still today, she does not have a over exotic look. It's very exotic, but it's not like, it wasn't overdone. And that's who I think that I felt comfortable with getting the guidance from, Sabrina. She was very, how can I say it? She was someone I looked up to and that I think that I could gain a lot of knowledge from. She was very beautiful, breathtaking, but it wasn't one of those ones you had to do a second take. And that was very important to me because I live in Baltimore, Maryland, and it's a lot of shame. It's a lot of stigma around being trans. It's a lot of hurt. It's a lot of, you know, things that go on with the society that we live in. And from what I've seen, she was able to pass in both worlds, the mainstream and in the ballroom scene. So I took a taking to her because of her look. Once I got to know her more, she had a lot of education that educated me on where to get the hormones from and different things of how to get silicone injections and things like that. Because at that time, we didn't have free breast implants or free surgeries for trans women because, like I said before, it wasn't even named at that time. So everything, when I was growing up, it was black market, to say the least. It was black market. But with the right guidance, it was a lot of people who had the wrong type of silicone. It was people that had good silicone. And thank God that I had the mother that I had who introduced me to a woman who had the good cells, quote unquote. I haven't had any allergic reactions or anything fatally wrong with any of the silicone that I have, but I'm grateful that today that it is open for trans women to go get free breast implants, or insurance does take care of it now, whereas so back in my time, that wasn't something that was out there.
At that time, people had to take a lot of risks.
Yes.
That they don't have to take now.
Correct.
Yeah. So it sounds like you kind of auditioned a series of mothers before you landed on the person you wanted to stick with.
Correct.
Okay. And then, you know, with Sabrina, how long was it before she became your mother? And what's the process by which someone becomes a mother? Because, I mean, when you just meet her, she's not your mother. So how does that happen?
Well, luckily, I took a taking to her. I thought she was beautiful. And at the young age of 17, going on 18, she found me beautiful as well. But she's seen me beforehand. So that wasn't my first encounter with her. I seen her beforehand, but I didn't even recognize that I met her, because it was like a whole stoop full of trans women that I thought was beautiful. Back then, I met Rose, Chanel, Sanaya, Ebony, like I said, Misha Milan, Carrie, and Sabrina, and Bridget. And they all hung together in Baltimore City. And that was like the first women that I seen that was like breathtaking. They all were beautiful. They all had breasts. They all had nice bodies. They all had soft skin. Their facial features were very feminine. So I met them at a very young age. They remembered me, but I didn't remember all of them. I just knew they were all beautiful. Sabrina stuck out, like I said, because she was more like myself. She was more approachable. I'm not saying the other women weren't approachable, but for me, she was more approachable. I think we had more in common living in Baltimore. And actually, when I think back, once we became friends and she became my mom, because with mom, you have to have a friendship. The way she picked me is that the younger person picked the person that they want to mentor them. And also the older person have to pick you. And she picked me as well. What we came to realize is that we grew up in the same neighborhood, like a block away from each other. I heard about her and her cousin Whitney and her aunt Lauren when I was growing up from neighborhood gossip. But I didn't realize this was the same people until we had a connection. We started talking and I found out that this was the lady who lived around the corner that I heard so much about, her, her cousin and her aunt.
So what, you know, I'm thinking about you, like age 13, 14, you're transitioning, but you don't really have the language or the knowledge about how to do it. And I imagine that at that point you hadn't met a lot of trans women either. So suddenly you're in ballroom. There are a large number of gorgeous trans women. So I'm curious, like how you felt, you know, when that happened.
Honestly, at the age of 13, 14, 15, I think that I was more inclined to, didn't know what a trans was. I was just knew that I felt different. And I mimicked a female who body type was like myself. And I just tried to age with the ladies of my age with my body structure. So that's how it came to be. I didn't really get anything from the ballroom scene because I just knew that I looked at a girl, cisgender female, and the similarities that we had, and I just made sure that whatever she did, I did, to stick up, to stay with the times. Once I got into ballroom, it created the extras, I would say. I always was feminine, but I think that more so of it was possible for me to move forward because, like I said, I was dressing like a female, but I didn't take hormones. I didn't know anything about hormones. So ballroom scene introduced me to what hormones do. It makes your skin softer. It slows down the process of your hair. It slows down the your puberty of becoming a male, and it switches it around to becoming a female. So all of your features would be more feminine than masculine. So from ballroom seeing me actually seeing women like myself, older women like myself, I was at awe. One of the women that I first seen who walked was Danielle Revlon, God rest her soul, the mother of the House of Revlon, iconic. She was a darker skinned African-American woman. And she was slim, tall, statuesque, And it was just like, wow. So it is possible to live this life and to be gorgeous, to be beautiful, and to still be able to fit in with society. Because my biggest fear was I couldn't be a homosexual male because I felt like I was too feminine to be a male. And I don't think that I would really fit into society. I think that I would stick out more if I was didn't transition. I think transitioning was for myself was made it easier for me to deal with society, that I wasn't giving them something, advertising something that wasn't true. I know that I felt like a woman and I wanted everybody to get that. Like, I didn't want to be a guy who had feminine ways. I actually wanted to be a woman. So being in ballrooms, seeing other women who have progressed, that was older than me, who also was 6'1" and 6'2" and still was beautiful, statuesque, model-like. So that's how I, you know, kind of brought everything together, because my thing was I knew that I wasn't going to be the average female because I was tall. So I knew that a model type would be the type of female that I could go into, the type of woman that I could be and fit into society, because it all made sense. The height, the slim build. So it was kind of, that's where I came up with that.
And remind me of the categories that you walked.
The categories I walked, my primary category would be female figure sex iron. I also walked femme queen female figure body, which means you have a nice body, a nice frame, and female figure face, which means you had a pretty face.
Okay. Can you tell me about sex iron? Maybe, first of all, just explain it for somebody who has no idea what it is, and then I'll ask some follow-up questions.
Sex siren, when I first walked my first category in sex siren, I was a little green because they told me I had to look for sex siren, but I didn't know exactly what sex siren entailed. To me, it's like my look made them push me out there faster. And I had no idea what sex siren was. Now, as I progressed with time, the first time I actually walked a real ball, which was in Philadelphia, the category was called Sex Siren, Bring It Like the Ice Princess. You had to wear either baby blue, white, or silver. And I won the category. I wore my prom dress that I wore in 1999 when I graduated from high school. I wore my prom dress as the Ice Princess. The my House of Revlon, you had to have a production. I didn't know what a production was. So what they did is, being the Ice Princess, it was just me in the middle. It was like six guys on the side with white candles. And basically you just had to sell it. Sell it basically means exactly what it sounds. You have to sell your product. If you're being sexy, sexy moves, sexy moves, hair whips, something like a playmate, I would say. It would put you in the mind of a playmate.
Playmate bunny?
Yeah, like a Playboy bunny. Okay. Yeah, something like that. Pin-up doll, burlesque, those type of things. And a point that, you know, me being already into modeling and dancing, it made it kind of easy for me to take what I've gained from marching, also modeling in high school, and I just collided them all together, and the look worked for me. So therefore I had the looks. I already had some skills with choreography and modeling, so I just added all three of those together, and there you'll have it. As I progressed in Sex Siren, I figured out different ways of how to be sexy, what it meant to be sexy. I remember one time that I walked, and I'm a big Beyonce fan. And I watched Beyonce, that's one of my biggest, Diana Ross, Tina Turner, those type of sex symbols. And I just took some of the moves that they did and I just incorporated into walking. So that's how I became, that's how I got my own feel of sex siren. I just would take what I would see from people that I admired, Naomi Campbell, Beyonce, Diana Ross, Tina Turner, Donna Summers, those type of sex symbols, Marilyn Monroe, Farrah Fawcett, and I just took a little bit of everybody, and then I took my own creative juices to come up with my own brand of what type of sex siren I wanted to be. I was always for the classy. I love gowns. I love dresses. I love sexy lingerie, but I never was trashy with it. I always try to be very classy with everything that I do. So I brought it from a classier point of view. When I wore lingerie, it was the whole Victoria's Secret model, how I would bring it. So a lot of things I got from sexier feels of regular life, and I would bring them to ballroom.
And why did Sex Siren, the category, appeal to you at the time? Like, what kept you coming back?
Well, I like to be a model. I love modeling. I love dancing. And I had a nice body. I was always tall. I was always slim. I wasn't really concerned about realness because I knew that I could fit into real life situations, mainstream. So to walk realness to me felt like that wasn't doing me justice. I wanted to be extra. In everyday society, you have to fit in with what everybody else does. And that gave me a chance to step outside of my normal box and to do something different, to wear the sexy outfits. Because going to heterosexual functions, when you wear certain things, you get a lot of attention from the guys. They want to talk to you. They want to buy you drinks. Not to say that's a problem, but sometimes it gets a little overwhelming. This was a place where I could be my natural self. I could let my creative juices flow. I could put on a bra and a pair of panties, and I didn't feel like I was being attacked or mauled by men and stuff like that. So it gave me the time to be creative with my body. Things that I wear to accent my legs, my flat stomach, my perky breasts. So that's how I think that I fit with Sex Siren. That's why I got into Sex Siren. That's why it registered with me so great. Like I said, I was thrown into it by Father Tony, but I took his vision of what he thought, and I made it my own, and I just kept moving forward in it.
Well, let me ask you, what, I don't know, is, because anybody can perform Sex Siren, right? So is it, what is unique to trans women performing Sex Siren, you think?
Well, I think that you say anybody can do Sex Siren. I don't think that that's true.
Well, I mean, any female figure, male figure can do Sex Siren. I'm just curious if there's something specific to you as a trans woman doing Sex Siren. Does that, what does that mean?
Well, I think that the gift is that for me being born biologically male, and for me to have the body, the look of a female, and also take it a step forward with being sexy with your transition. A lot of people aren't sexy with their transition, and a lot of people don't really, well, a lot of people did not go for sexy. Now today is different. Everybody wants to be sexy. Everybody wears long hair. I was always exotic. I have a look that gives you not Baltimorean, I should say, and it doesn't naturally give me off of an African-American. It's kind of like an island feel. A lot of people say I look Ethiopian. My family is Indian. The tribe is Sioux. So the fact that I had an exotic look worked for me. So that's how it made it spectacular for me or different from anybody else, because a male who's cisgender and just gay, it's easier for him to go to the gym, work out, because that's natural for a regular guy. For a cisgender female, it's natural. You see all types of women on type of on Essence, their models, their bathing suit models and things like that. But for a male to transition from a male to female and to still have a sexy body where it's very feminine, very soft, that was something, that's why it was something to me, because I held it to my heart, because not only am I real, I took it a step further and was able to come out of my clothes and still look feminine. So to me, that's the hardest Sex Siren to get to. Like I said, for males it's easy, for cisgender women it's easy, but for a trans woman it's kind of hard, because you're dealing with different things. We all have different biological growths. We all may not have a small back, we may not have a small stomach, we may be ill built for a woman in the beginning before your hormones start to to work. But for me, to be a slim girl and to take hormones and to get a little fleshy in certain areas and not other areas, that was great to me because it was something that stood out amongst other trans women. So that was why.
And then I guess in the context of ballroom too, then you're being celebrated.
Yes.
Whereas I guess that's one of the things I'm trying to understand too, because there's ballroom, but that's another world. And then there's the dominant culture. And in the dominant culture, trans women are stigmatized, but it seems to be different in ballroom.
Yes. Right? Yes. With ballroom, when I first got into ballroom, they knew that I was a transgender. They knew that I was born male. They knew that I transitioned to female. The field that I get, they still was protectors. All of my friends, all the male friends, the House of Revlon males, was very protective of their femme queens, transgenders, women. So it made me feel like I was celebrated because, for one, I was able to pull off the look of being feminine. Then I was also able to pull off the look of being sexy, not wearing much clothes at a ball. So they made me feel like very feminine. They made me feel very protected. So that was a great feeling.
And one small question, is there a difference between femme queen and transgender? And if so, what is it?
No, it's not. Femme queen is just what they call you in the ballroom thing, but it's really a transgender.
So what is the reason for that? Why femme queen and ballroom? Maybe that's a historical question.
Well, I don't know. I think it is historical, but I think the way it goes is in ballroom, you call the male who are dealing with other males, they call them butch queens because there's more masculine look. And for the femme queens, I think it's more of you're feminine, you look more feminine, and you're a queen. So I think that's how they got femme queen versus butch queen versus butch realness as far as women transitioning to men. So I think it's all in to you, what you're giving, you're feminine. Mm-hmm. And then you put queen at the end.
I have some questions about history. So you joined the House of Revlon. When you did that, did you learn about the history of the house or the history of ballroom?
I kind of did. When I got in the House of Revlon, I was introduced to the father. I never seen the mother in person. Like, we never had a one-on-one, but the mother of the house was Danielle at the time. As far as the history, they told me that the House of Revlon was around for a very long time. It was one of those alpha houses in the ballroom scene at the time. And that's basically what I basically got. I didn't really get like in depth on like what it stood for. I know that a lot of the names Revlon and stuff like that go with things that are of beauty and mainstream. So I don't know if that was something that they purposely did. But when I was growing up, the houses were basically houses of something that was of beauty to me. That's what I gathered from it.
Curious, when you first started, how did ballroom in Baltimore feel different than ballroom in other cities?
Baltimore ballroom scene to me was, it gets you ready for the New York, Philadelphia, and other states. Like you mentioned, that New York was the creme de la creme of ballroom scene. Baltimore to me seemed like it was a stepping stone. Once I got really good into ballroom scene, a lot of people didn't think that I came from Baltimore. They thought that I was from up north, from Philadelphia or New York. A lot of the people that was in ballroom scene, either if they lived in Philadelphia, thought I was from New York, or if they were from New York, they thought I lived in Philadelphia. No one ever put me in the same room or put it together, me and Baltimore. So to me, that was kind of weird because I was from Baltimore. I was a Baltimorean, born and raised. But from what I got, from what they gathered from me, my attitude, the way I brought it, the way I sold it, the way my confidence was, it was more of a New York up north type of feel versus Baltimore, where it's like it's a stepping stone. Mediocre, I would say, from what I gathered. it was mediocre to big ballroom, which is New York, Philadelphia, up north states.
You think that's still true today? That that's the perception, at least?
Yeah, and I'm going to say being a Baltimorean, it's not, the ballroom scene is not very big here. You do have a lot of people that are in ballroom, but for you to become a legend, a icon, you have to travel outside of Baltimore. Whereas, though, if you live in Philadelphia or New York, it's easier for you to become a legend because that's where you're from. And it's easier for you to get two balls and things like that. If you're from Baltimore, you have to travel from Baltimore to New York to Atlanta to Philadelphia. And like you said, most of the big balls that actually counted was in New York City. So for me to be from Baltimore and me being current in New York balls and Philadelphia balls and things like that, it was just like, okay, she's at every ball, so she has to be from up north versus traveling to balls from Baltimore City.
Okay. So how do you think ballroom in Baltimore, or just ballroom in general, has changed since you started to present day? What have been some of the major changes?
I think that when I first was involved, I think that the femme queens, transgender females, were the highlight of the ball. It was so much more femme queens, transgenders that was involved with ballroom. It was more elegant. Now today, I think it's more geared to the homosexual males. Although they still have a place for trans women has progressed so much that they take what they get from ballroom and then they move to mainstream. And I know that a lot of the trans women are so attached with them being their authentic selves, with fitting into society and being women, that it becomes something that's in the back burner to them. And that's why you don't see as many femme queens or transgender females that much to me, is what I see. I see more of a male dominant ballroom scene now today. So the difference for me is that when I came in, it was more feminine driven. It was more women, trans women. Now I see that there are more males that are involved with ballroom and spurts of women. And when the women do come, and it's like, ooh, the women are finally here. So they're trying to get the women to come back. But since women are dealing with so much in their mainstream and things have changed, trans women are not in the black anymore. They're not undercover. You can be your authentic self. And a lot of women strive to be as normal, if normal is something that we can say, because what is normal? But more normal in regular mainstream society. Correct. And also, what I have seen, and I'm not going to say this is with everything, what I have seen is that a lot of times ballroom can make trans women feel very inadequate, meaning that even though we're from the LGBT community, we still feel, when I say we, the trans women still feels that homosexual males now today still don't understand the difference between transgender and themselves. A lot of them still think that we're all the same, and it's not everyone. It's not everyone that thinks that way, but for the most part, I know that we don't like to feel like we're all the same. We're very different. Whereas though, what your challenges is aren't my challenges. And they don't appreciate us as much as they used to. It's like, oh, girl, you just, okay. where back in the day it was more respect, and they had a better, they were more supportive and they were more protective of the girls. Now it's like, oh, we're all the same. So that can do a lot of mental damage for trans women. And it's like, I'm not going to keep coming here, and in mainstream, I can be respected as Rhonda, the female, the woman. And I come here and I still have somebody saying, oh, you know, it makes you feel like, well, we move so far in the world. But in ballroom, it still feels as though, oh, we're all the same, and we're not. And that's one part, to me, makes me feel inadequate with being in ballroom sometimes.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Okay, so there's growing respect in the world as a whole, but you're saying there's not growing respect in ballroom, and just the opposite, it might be getting worse?
Kind of, sort of, with certain people. You still have the elders of ballroom who still go off of that same belief. My father, James Icon, is one of those ones who still treat the girls like women and still pamper them and still protect them. Whereas though the youth, the younger fathers of today may not feel the same way. They may feel like, I'm not sure on how they feel. I can't say how they feel, but what it seems is like the respect level has gone down. And also that comes with a lot of times some of the younger girls who are so intertwined with the men of ballroom, whereas though it seems like it's too regular now, where it's like, my friend was just a male, and now he's transgendered. So I really don't see any difference because it's the same person. Whereas though, when you were transgender, you stepped away and you did all of your things inward, in-house. And when they seen you, they just seen you for the woman that you were. And now they're going through the whole transition with the young ladies. They're seeing everything. So it's like, by them seeing everything, it's no longer a factor. It's just like, okay, wow.
Oh, is that your phone?
Yes.
Okay,
sorry. I didn't know what was going on. Okay. I've heard that from other people as well. I mean, I interviewed Monique, and she had the same thing to say. So I guess one last question on that, just to play historian, why do you think that shift happened in ballroom from, you know, a great respect of trans women or femme queens to where we are now? Like, what are some of the reasons it changed?
If you know.
I really can't tell you that I do know. But what I can say is, I guess, on how the women see themselves. With the new thing that's going on, it's more how you feel. It's more open for society to see trans women. And a lot of trans persons are doing it for the wrong reasons. And I'm not going to say the wrong reasons because I'm going to say from my perspective. I'm not going to say generally across the board. From my thing is that I knew how I felt for a long time. This was something that it was embedded into me. This is something that I felt. This is something that I could not move forward with until I looked the part of how I felt. Well, nowadays, you have so many trans women who has grown up in ballroom scene, who has been males for so long in ballroom scene, and then instantaneously, overnight, they become the girl. And I think that is where the disconnect comes. Because like I said, when I came into ballroom, I was already Rhonda. So it was nothing that they could make me feel. They just added to what Rhonda was versus them actually creating Rhonda. And I think that that's where it comes in. I feel like a lot of the males feel like they're creating the transgender. They're creating the femme queens of today. They've been through the process with them. And they feel like they have more involvement with them, and they're there through the process. So I guess that's how it loses respect. Whereas though, everything I did was with the femme queens or with the transgender or with my mom, Sabrina, things like that, where it was like, you didn't see me until I came out. And it was a particular amount of men that I hung out with. And like I said, they always made me feel supported, protected. So now you have people who are just, one minute they're a boy, the next minute they're a girl, and it's just like, we're all the same. So it like kind of dumbs it down or plays it down for the ones who actually had to go through a lot of stuff to get where they are. Like, I had to go through being the first trans person that people meet and breaking it down what a trans person is and how I felt. Now, today, we've already fought that fight. So now it's just like, okay, the girls fought the fight before me. So now I can just come out and be my authentic self, and it is what it is. So I think that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, there's something going on. So I just have a few kind of follow-up questions or wrap-up questions. And this actually was one that Marco suggested that I ask everybody, is what three things would you like the younger generation, the younger ballroom generation, to know about ballroom?
Ballroom can definitely enhance your life. It can show you things that you didn't think was possible. For myself, it gave me the confidence to actually go on a runway in mainstream society and to know that I am beautiful. I do have what it takes, and that I can do anything that I want to do. Ballroom, to me, for the younger people, I want them to understand that it has been underneath wraps for so long. Now it's mainstream. People are getting famous from it. Where it seems like now it's so crucial for you to be on point. But like I said, I think it gets you ready for mainstream because the LGBT community is the most critical thinkers, I would say. They are the ones that can make you and break you. So I feel as though if you can get through ballroom, you can make it in any type of environment because ballroom is so critical on who you are, your appearance, and how you bring it and things like that. So I think that that's a couple of good things that have along with that ballroom do bring. And it also can help you with traveling. If you've never been outside of your state, you meet people in other states. You meet people that are genuine. You meet other people like yourselves, and you're not alone. You get to feel like, okay, I'm not alone. Where we get lost in Baltimore, Baltimore is so small, and you get so closed-minded, and the feel of Baltimore can be so overwhelming sometimes that you feel like you have not a place, you have no one to understand you. But ballroom gives you that insight that you can meet a girl from New York, and you can have something in common with her. And, you know, New York is fast track. It's so much ahead of where we are. Not that far, but, you know, it's ahead of what we are. And if you meet people from New York and it feels like, oh, I can be friends, which makes you step outside of your normal box, go to places that you never thought that you would go, meet people that you didn't think that you would meet. So it opens up your network as well. So, and also now with ballroom scene, you get to meet stars. They come in and you get to meet the stars, and it makes you feel that you are wanted, a part. It makes you feel like, okay, I can do whatever I want. It's not just a dream anymore. I can actually do it.
What stars?
Rihanna has come, Janet Jackson, Naomi Campbell. Who else have come? A couple of people have come to different bowls. A lot of people come to the bowls in New York as well. So yeah, just to name a few, I can't remember all, but I'm quite sure I know that a lot of the stars have come in and out of ballroom scene since the new era.
Right, the new kind of mainstream.
Yes.
Era. Yeah.
Yes.
It seems like there have been two. There was that moment when Madonna put out Vogue.
Yes.
And
yes.
Now there's a new.
Yes.
Kind of mainstream.
It is.
Yeah. So speaking of mainstreaming, I'm curious what your thoughts are about the ball at the Peabody and the whole kind of project at the Peabody. How does this fit into the longer history of ballroom?
Well, I think that it being having a ball at Peabody is very beautiful. It's a very beautiful space. And for Baltimoreans, it gives us something to look forward to. Like I said, Ballroom in Baltimore has been at Buns, the Paradox. I think with mainstream, with you going here at the Peabody, it gives people a different feel. It gives you where you can come to a ball and feel like, oh, I can dress up. I can feel important going to it. It's the actual event versus just the ball. So having it here was a great idea, I think. It's historical. It makes you feel like you're a part of history. It gives you this fire that burns inside you that makes you want to do more.
And it feels like ballroom. I mean, I guess the conversations I've had with people in ballroom is very much about history. And the word that people have been using is moments, creating these moments that people are going to remember, you know, in the future. So I find that fascinating, you know, and I guess everybody kind of wants to be remembered, but I wonder if there's something specific about ballroom where being remembered is really important.
Well, honey, let me tell you, being a girl from Baltimore, Maryland, who did not know, who knew that she was beautiful, who knew that she had the looks, but ballroom scene has made me feel great about myself. It also, like I said, it gives you a chance to step outside of your normal box and to do things that you've always wanted to do. It gives you a chance to create a moment. A moment is something that will last in time. Like, now that I am a legendary girl who walks sex siren, a legendary sex siren, I've created moments. I've had people that have been watching ballroom for a while who has come up to me and said, hey, I remember that you walked and you had black long hair and you wore this white gown and you took it off and you had the pasties and you walked with a dildo. It's something that they remember. And it's like when you put your time and energy in something and for someone to remember it, it feels like I did not do it in vain. So that is a great feeling to have when you do something and you feel like, okay, I won. The trophy is gotten, the cash is gotten, the prize is gotten, but is someone going to really remember that? And for a person to come back years later, for myself, actually, to come back and say, yes, girl, I remember you walked this category and you destroyed it, and I remembered you were so beautiful. I never really seen you out before, and when James brought you out, it was just like a new feeling. It was something new. It was something beautiful. It was something authentic. It was something that I've never seen before. And the way you carry yourself with so much class and poise, it was something beautiful. So those things made me feel great. So it gives you like, okay, all right, I actually did something. A moment in time. I made a moment in time. And who else, who in the world doesn't want a memory? Who doesn't want to be remembered for something? Not just negativity, something positive that sticks in someone here. And it does me well because it's some young trans woman who's thinking, oh girl, I don't know if I can do it. But if they look at me and they say, oh, well, she didn't have all this extra body and these big humongous breasts and this wide behind and she still won sex siren, that's something that can help the next generation out. So that's always a plus to me.
Question. Can you just say a little bit more about, I don't know why, but I'm obsessed with the word moments. I'm obsessed with it. And I just find it so fascinating. Can you say a little bit more about what a moment is, what it means, like how people talk about moments?
A moment is something that stops and awes the whole crowd. It's something that you put your time into. My first moment that people will remember is the first time I ever walked a ball and won sex siren. The moment was that I was someone new. I was something that nobody actually knew. I was an underdog coming in, and to actually win a category against heavy hitters, that is a moment. Another moment for me is, fast forward 2 years later, 2017, 2018, is when I became ballroom icon Mother DMV. And I walked the ball in New York City and I had a red gown on and I kind of stopped time. I've been in ballroom for forever. I've come in and out. I've won a lot of battles. I've conquered a lot of battles. I've also been won over. But when you have that moment where it's you, you did everything you can. You've got your hair the way you want it. Your dress is the way you want it. Your makeup the way you want it. And you actually go on the floor and it's rememberable because it's a lot of girls who come out for different things. And for you to stop time and people remember it, the pictures are taken and it's like, she was breathtaking. She was gorgeous. She stopped the whole show. I came from the back because everybody was screaming and yelling. I wanted to see who it was. And for a person to see you grow from young Rhonda, 1999, when I first came to ballroom, 18 years old, to Rhonda that it was 35 years old, years later, and to see she still has it. She hasn't lost it. It's actually better. It's like fine wine. Those are moments.
Okay, two more questions and then I'm done, I promise. You said that when you have a moment, you stop time. What does that mean? Tell me what that means.
When you stop time, what I mean by that is that you have all the judges stand on their feet. It's something that's like, okay, this is outside of normal. Because when you see, for the femme queens, you see femme queens in and out. You see them on the sides. And not at this time, like I said before, a lot of femme queens don't always indulge in ballroom scene. They're there for the kikis, the kakas, for the networking, for the I'm there with my girlfriend. But not a lot of girls hit the floor. And for them to see a girl who has been doing it for so long to hit the floor and to make everybody say, all right, she is it. And what happened for me for the last one that I've had is Father Tony, like I said, was the first father I've had in ballroom. He didn't even know that it was me when I came out. And he was so, she's beautiful. And then when he got to go, that's Rhonda, it's like, wow. He had to come up to me and say, Rhonda, you have really grown into a beautiful young lady. You have really grown. And I love your maturity. That's a moment. That is definitely a moment to remember when someone sees your growth and they can come back to you and say, you got it. You still got what it takes. You're beautiful. You haven't lost a thing. I don't even know what else to say. And that is a moment. That is something that cannot be just thrown to the side. It's something that people will always remember.
Okay, last question. When you're up there on the stage, you're in the moment, time has stopped, the judges are on their feet. What does that feel like?
To be honest, most of the time, I'm ready to just get off the stage, period. The reason is because it's like you, as the person that's on the floor, you know that everybody is going up, but it makes you more self-conscious of what's going on with you. Is every hair in place? Is my lipstick still on? Is it red lipstick on my teeth? Is the body shaking? Is it moving? Does it look soft? Does it look pretty? Like, what's going on? And after those fears come, you just get into the moment and take the moment for what it is, and you just ooze into who you're supposed to be at that time. It's a great feeling because me, although I'm legendary and I've been doing it for a while, it's still a shaky. My legs tremble when I go out on the floor, and you still have this complex. Are they going to go up? Are they going to live for this? Is it going to be successful? Am I going to win? Who do I have to battle? But once you get that applause, and you get the girls and the guys on their feet and they're snapping and they're clapping and they're taking pictures, you just have to relax and just sit in that moment and take in that moment. Because like I said, the ballroom scene can be very critical. So when you get that attention and everybody is on their feet, it is a beautiful feeling because it's like all of my work, all of my energy, all of my panic attacks, it was all worth it. So that's how you feel. It's like a sigh of relief because hitting the runway, I don't care what any girl says, any guy say, you can be the most extrovert person out there. But when you hit the floor, you still think of your insecurities. And once the people, the crowd, they go up, it's like, whew, I can finally breathe because what I wanted to accomplish, win, lose, or draw, long as I made a moment and they can remember me, that is what I set out for. And when you do that, oh, it's the best feeling in the world. It's like a high for a whole 3 days. I tell you, it's like a high. It's like the best high that you can't never come off of it. It's like, I did it. And then the pictures come up. Then people comment on the pictures. So it's like, I'm still up in the air with this. I still feel like, whew, all right, I did it. Move on. So it's a wonderful feeling. It really is. I smile inside just thinking about it.